Okay, so this year, tonight is dedicated to the Shoshim of my grandmother, Gladys Teitelbaum, Gittel Bat, Leib Fehinda, Leha Shalom. Shoshim is technically tomorrow, but when I was speaking to my mom earlier this week, I realized that this would actually work out to do it this way. So it's nice to be able to learn Pirkei Avos together again. We had some Shirim on the Rambam's introduction, the Shemona Prakim, but being able to do this Pirkei Avos Shir sort of in a similar way that we did last summer is very exciting for me. So, and it happens to be that we are up to Perek Aleph, so we're going to go back there. So tonight we're going to focus on Shammai, and Shammai sometimes gets a short end of the stick because people often focus on Hillel and his virtues, but Shammai had what to teach us as well. And in fact, we will at a certain point encounter one of the paradigmatic stories about Shammai, and it will fit its way into Pirkei Avos. So in Perek Aleph, Mishnah Tetvav, it says, Shammai Omer, Asei Torat Chakeva. So Shammai used to say, make your study of Torah a fixed practice. And of course, each phrase here we're going to interpret, and we're going to see a few different interpretations. But for its face value, we'll say, Asei Torat Chakeva means to make the study of your Torah a fixed practice. And more of it after, Asei Harbe, speak little but do much. And receive all men with a pleasant countenance. So we'll just go through and we'll see each phrase and interpret it, and we'll see a variety of very rich interpretations of this Mishnah. So I say Torah Chakeva, make your study of Torah fixed. So Rashi, of course, one of the classics on any text of Torah. So he says in here, Shalote Kovea Itima Torah, Ala Kol Hayom Tasena Alecha Keva. So it's not that one should merely establish a fixed time for Torah, but rather the whole day should be fixed for learning. That Torah should be fixed as your main staple in life. So that's the first interpretation Rashi offers. And then he offers a second one that says to fix for yourself a practice of learning a certain amount every day. So whether it's four chapters of something or five chapters of something, talking about Tanakh, maybe Mishnayos, but sending a fixed amount to learn. So he actually doesn't say anything about having a fixed time, but it's either amount or really that Torah should be your keva. Torah should be the main thing that occupies you. Now, many Mefarshim jump on this. Usually what Rashi says is something that we give great import in, and we still do, but Mefarshim jump on this a little bit because it seems to contradict some very sacred principles of life, and more importantly, one offered by the Gemara. If your entire day is occupied by Torah, so what about making a living? What about making a parnasa? So, in fact, there's a Gemara in Brachot that says "Vesavta deganecha." So that's those two words come from Shema, and the paragraph "Vehayam Shemoa" talks about gathering your grain. So what's that teaching us? Hanheg b'hen minhag derech eretz yivir Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel says that you're supposed to work. Vesavta deganecha means that the Torah is telling us that you work, that you gather your crops, that you have a living. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says, on the other hand, that if a person is plowing all day and sowing and harvesting and threshing, if they're constantly occupied in the agricultural process, Torah ma'atzeh aleha, what's going to become of Torah? If we're always occupied with our work, what's going to happen with Torah? So a little more discussion about this, but the Gemara says here, in the name of Abaye, harbasu ki Rabbi Shmuel, many people did like Rabbi Shmuel, ve'alta beyadam. So both their Torah study and their livelihood were successful when they did like Rabbi Shmuel, meaning that they did work, that they made a living. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, but when people did like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, it didn't work for them. So So the conclusion of this would seem to be that if you have to work, you have to work. If you have to make a living, you have to make a living. And if you don't make a proper living for yourself, then your Torah is not going to be successful either. And then this is corroborated by a statement by Rava saying that during the months of Nisan and Tishrei, which were crucial agricultural periods, don't come learn with me. Go out to the field, gather your crops, do what you need to do in order to have your parnasa the rest of the year. Otherwise, you're going to be hungry and constantly searching for food. You're not going to be able to learn Torah properly. So this seems to contradict what Rashi says, that Asei Torat Chakeva means that you're supposed to learn Torah all day. So how are you going to possibly make a living that way? And the Gemara Brachot here seems to corroborate that. And when we look at a Gemara in Shabbat, so Rava says, actually the same Rava who appears above. So Rava says that at the time that we, our time is on earth has expired, we come up to Shemaim, and we're going to be asked a few questions. So one is going to be, did we engage in business honestly? And the second was, Kavati Itim LaTorah, did you designate times for Torah? So the question is not, well, you can interpret this as, the question is not, did you learn Torah all day? The question is, you know, as you were occupied with your other pursuits, did you enact times for learning Torah? So that would seem to also contradict what Rashi says. And this is further backed up by the Rashbats, Rabbi Shimon ben Samach Duran, author of the commentary Magen Avot, Pirkei Avot. So he outright says what Rashi said doesn't work because that contradicts the Gemara that we mentioned. So rather, Otan Sha'och Tipalatar Yu Keva, those times which you decide to learn Torah should be fixed. That you shouldn't decide that do a little today, a little tomorrow, maybe in a couple of weeks. Don't have much of a schedule. You're not going to be successful. The time's going to fly by and you're not going to get around to it. So you got to make it fixed. That is part of what it means to be successful. And I'm not going to go too much into the halacha here, but this is certainly codified in the Sifri Halacha. The Rambam says that that doesn't matter what your wealth status is, whether you're healthy, whether you're ailing, whether you're young, whether you're old, whether you have a lot of energy, whether you're poor, doesn't matter. Chayav likboa lo zman l'talmud Torah b'yom uvalayla. You're obligated to appoint time for learning Torah, both day and night. And this is based on a pasuk, v'agita bo yomam v'layla, shall meditate on words of Torah there and day in and day and night. So that means that A, we're obligated to learn Torah day and night, and that time should be fixed. And the Shulchan Aruch, and significantly this appears after Hilchos Tevilah, Shulchan Aruch says once one leaves Shul, so they should go directly to the Beis Medrash, they should go directly to learn. V'yikba eight l'mon, one should fix a time to learn. Even if you think you're going to make a big profit, if you say, you know what, I can't run to learn right now because you know I have a big business deal that I can close. If I close it now, so Shulchan Aruch says that no matter what, after you go to daven in the morning, you should go directly to learn. The idea of going, you know, from Shul to the Beit Midrash was assuming that they were in two different places, but in theory, you could stay in Shul and learn, or our Shul's minyan meets in a Beis Medrash, so maybe that you get double points there. But you should set that time for learning and never, ever pass it up, because that's going to be what's going to keep your consistency in learning. And the Ramah adds that even if one doesn't necessarily know how to learn, which today's not much of an excuse because we have so many things available in English that there's plenty you can do, but in theory, one, you know, even just walking to the Beit Midrash gives one the reward for going, for walking there. And even if you just think about the Torah that you already know, you think about Yirat Shemayim, that has tremendous value. The Gemara in Kiddushin further establishes that in terms of what's in terms of what a person learns, so you divide it into three, so it should be a third in Torah, a third in Mishnah, meaning halacha, like psak halacha, and the third should be Talmud, meaning analysis. Talmud could be a little bit expansive. Rambam, in a way that we might find a little bit humorous, he says, so let's say a person works for 3 hours a day, and they have 9 hours a day to learn, so I don't know too many people who actually make a living outside of the profession of Torah where you have 9 hours to learn, but let's say you did. So you'd learn 3 hours Tanakh, 3 hours Halacha, and 3 hours of Gemara. And by the way, the Rambam that quoted above about that person's obligated to set a fixed time to learn. So in the next halacha, he says that, he talks about how Chazal, the different rabbis, had different jobs. They drew water, they were carpenters, whatever. They had professions, so they had means of making money, which on the one hand shows that one can become a Talmid Chacham and work, but on the other hand shows that even if you have a job, you still have an obligation to set times for learning. And I think a lot of this can be summed up in another Mishnah Pirkei Avot that says, "Ve'al tomar l'chshepana eshna shema lo tipana." So a person shouldn't say, "When I have time, I'll learn," because otherwise you might not learn. So the idea of being kovei itim l'Torah, I think, as most classically understood, with all respect to Rashi, the most classically way that we understand being kovei itim l'Torah is that we shouldn't assume that if we just say we'll do it when we have time, probably never going to have time. The time passes by. We always find things that we need to do. So making a time is very crucial for being able to learn Torah. And my own anecdotes, and I have my own thoughts about various things that were expressed here, but when I try to set time, especially for my own learning, and I don't think that teaching the same Mishnah and Brachot to fifth graders necessarily counts in the same way learning Torah as I would like. So I find that having those set times is very helpful. So especially since pandemic, I've been able to, I always learn Parsha after I daven in the morning, and that's like what the Shulchan Aruch was saying about connecting davening with learning, Yechu Michael Elchayo, to go from strength to strength. And also having the mountain set is something that's very helpful. Right before Shavuos, a colleague of mine started advertising an Archa Shulchan Yomi. So I started doing it. It's only 8 Se'ifim of Archa Shulchan. It takes 15-20 minutes. So that I do after Maariv every night. So again, having the set time has helped me basically almost never miss it. But also having that set amount also helps create a sense of progress. So I think that's quite important. The Ri'al Ashkar adds an element that Shammai's words of Asei Torat Kakeva is not coming in a vacuum, but it's actually coming to explain the words of both his teacher and his colleague. So his teacher was a Shmaya who came a few Mishnayot before. So Shmaya had said that Ehoved HaMelacha, you should love work. But Shmaya didn't say anything about learning Torah. So what, does Shmaya think that you don't have to learn Torah? So the Merkavat HaMishnah here is explaining that what Shammai is saying is coming to explain Shmaya. Can be a little bit of a tongue twister, Shammai and Shmaya. But Shammai is explaining what Shmaya said, that as important it is to love work, you should also don't forget to set time for learning Torah, and certainly Shmaya would agree with that. But on the other hand, Shammai's colleague Hillel had said, "Delo yadev ktala chayav," that somebody who doesn't learn is liable for death. So you might think, if I'm not, like Rashi said, if I'm not learning all day long, then I'm not doing my job. So Shammai is saying, no, it's not about that quantity of doing it all day long. You still should have a job. But the ikar, the essential thing, is that there should be kfiut, that there should be a set time for that learning. So just a couple of other interesting interpretations here. The Avot Rabbi Natan thinks of Asei Torat Chakeva in a very different way. That what does it mean, Asei Torat Chakeva? It means that if you hear something in Beis Medrash, you shouldn't make it casual or temporary. Rather, you should make it keva, meaning in the way you remember it. So you shouldn't let it go in one ear out the other ear, just kind of like, you know, loosely, you know, have the noise in the air, but actually make a point to make that Torah keva inside you, that it should penetrate you. So it's basically saying that everything I say tonight, you should make sure to remember. But in all seriousness, I think it's a nice idea that, you know, Torah doesn't need to be a past experience, but also, you know, we can take our active part and make it truly a part of us, especially when it's Torah that can inspire us. The Magen Avos adds another element of what a Seitor HaSkokeva can mean, which means that it should, whatever Torah you share should be keva. It should be the same. It should be consistent. Meaning that you shouldn't be lenient for other people and machmir for others. You shouldn't be make it for others and machmir for yourself and machmir for others. You shouldn't be machmir for yourself and make it for others. But it should be the same for you and for everybody. So, in some ways, this could be, you know, maybe a little bit, it's a little bit difficult to understand, because it's not necessarily always the case. Like, for example, the Mishnah Berurah might say, well, this is technically halacha, but somebody who is a Reish HaMayim or a Baal Nefesh should be a little more machmir. Or a person might say, a posek might say, well, for other people, you know, they need a greater getter, we need to make sure that they're not going to come to violate the halacha, so it'll be a little machmir. But, you know, for somebody who's aware of the halacha, it could be a little more mikil. And maybe, you know, someone who's a Baal Tshuva versus you know, Rosh Hashiva, and maybe the halacha is different for that. But this does bring out, I think, an important point of being consistent and of not being, and of avoiding hypocrisy. There shouldn't be hypocrisy in halacha. And certainly the idea of being more mikil for yourself, being more machmir for others, can come with detrimental consequences. So here, I remember Rav Hershel Schechter saying once that a certain child of a rabbi went off the derech because the rabbi was getting up in shul and saying you can't use electricity on Yontif, and then in his own basement, the child saw his father using electricity. So that, I assume, was in a time period when it was more up for discussion whether lights could be turned on Yontif, but the appearance of it was problematic. Tiferes Yisrael, Rabbi Shlomo Lipschitz, also gives a nice, you know, a little bit of a different interpretation of Asei Torat HaKeva, that it shouldn't, the opposite of Keva is Arai, that learning shouldn't be Arai, it shouldn't be casual, that it shouldn't be, you know, lazy while you're lying down and the like. So it's interesting that I saw this now, because recently a tradition published a summer reading list of various important books, both in Torah and in Mada, from their editorial board. So one rabbi recommended a book, I believe it's called The Yeshiva by Chaim Grade, and he introduced his review by saying, does Torah count as summer reading? I'm reminded of an image conjured by Dr. Tova Lichtensing during a tish in Adar 1997, and attacking the contemporary Orthodox social amalgam of Torah and fun, she painted the image of a person laying back on a chaise lounge with a sefer in one hand and a Coca-Cola in the other hand. True Torah learning involves an attitude of reverence and intensity. Such a relaxed summer reading posture counter-indicates that bearing. So it depends what you're learning. If you're reading a biography, maybe it's a little bit different. But that's what Tiferes Yisrael says. That's what Shammai is saying, is that, you know, in order to really accomplish something in Torah, to gain from it, so you have to treat it with the proper seriousness. On the other hand, perhaps in contrast, the next thing he says is that keva also means having some sort of peace of mind. That if your Torah is keva, that means that you're able to do it in a way that that works. So you have to have peace of mind. You should learn in a place where it's not too noisy, where there's distractions, that's comfortable. You should learn from books that are nicely printed, because that helps one, you know, sort of, you know, be engaged in a peaceful way with the learning. One's going to remember it better. It's more conducive to enjoying the learning. So there's that balance between being, you know, too casual, but also that you know, it's not, doesn't mean that you should put yourself in the most or in the least optimal situation. But you know, learning should be something that's reasonably comfortable. Okay, and the last thing Yisrael says that Aseh Torah Keva should be continuous, should be consistent, and breaks are conducive to forgetting, which is true. And the last thing that I'll mention on this topic is Midrash Shmuel, and I think this is a very, very nice idea, that he says there's two parts to Torah. Here he's not talking about the Keva part, but he's saying, why does it say, I say Torah Tcha Keva? Why is it your Torah should be Keva? So he explains that there's two parts of Torah. One is the sodot of Torah, the secrets of Torah, the Kabbalah. And that is very up there, lofty. It's Torah Tashem. Very difficult for a human being to understand and to comprehend. But then there's the other part of Torah, which is the basic meanings of scriptures, of Tanakh, the halachot, the interpersonal halachas, Isser v'Heter, what's allowed, what's forbidden, which all of us are able to attain on some level, and that's the part that we should concentrate on. And it's on this second part that Shammai is talking about, Aseh Torah Tcha Keva, the way that's your Torah, that this is attainable, and that teaches us that that there's really a lot that we can gain from learning Torah. So just to summarize, the conventional understanding, most conventional understanding of Aseh Torah Tcha Keva is that that in order for Torah to have an impact on our lives, we have to make it something that's regular, it's consistent, perhaps a set time, maybe a set amount that we learn every time. But even as it's important for us to be occupied in whatever we're doing to help the world in order to make a parnasa, it's still very important that Torah is something that is consistent. In some ways, so my grandmother wasn't observant, but she was a violin teacher, and my own memories of learning violin, you know, very much support this idea or are supported by this idea. So I Googled this, and so here it talks about, you know, practice makes perfect, or does it? So how do you succeed in practicing violin? So this teacher talks about some things that we actually talked about, that you have to have, you know, a time that works, a time that you have the proper energy. You should be consistent, try to practice at the same time. You have to have a location that's going to work. You have to make sure your physical needs are met. That you want to make sure you accomplish something that's productive, that there's a purpose to it. You know, what are your goals? So this is something that certainly my grandmother bought into, and sometimes it's easy to feel like why does a person have to spend so much time learning Torah? There's other things, but I think, you know, anybody who's an expert in any field will say that if you want to be successful, if you want to gain something from anything, so you have to put in the time. It's true, exercising as well. If you want to be successful in exercising, so you you have to have a rhythm, you have to have a consistent basis for doing it. So there's what that we can learn from, my brother says 100,000 hours. Actually, I think Malcolm Gladwell said that there's 10,000, and once you do something for 10,000 hours, you become an expert. So I think what comes out from this Mishnah, we can learn also from the way people approach other fields, is that having kfiut, having a sense of fixed practice, of established practice, leads one to success. Okay, the next part of the Mishnah says, "Emor me'at ve'aseh harbe," say little and do much. So this is somewhat, I think, straightforward, but Rabbeinu Yonah explains that if you make promises to other people, so say little and do much, and that's just, you know, basic manners, it's basic ethics, midercha moser ve'chasidus. And where do we learn it from? We actually learn from Avraham Avinu, because when the three angels, whatever they were, came to him at his tent, and at the beginning of Parshat Vayera, it says, he just said to them, "V'akha padlachem," I'm going to grab some bread, And then he came out with butter and milk and meat and the like. Avram said, promised little and did a lot, right? So this is somewhat obvious. If you want to do good customer service, so you don't want to underserve, you don't want to overpromise. But more than just about being customer service, it's certainly an ethical thing to be able to say what we're able to do, whatever we're able to do whatever we say. So we shouldn't overpromise. And if we want to tie into this week's Parsha, Medrash Shmuel says that when it comes to vows, so this is the essence of vows. This maxim is very much found both in this week's Parsha. Well, this week's Parsha just talks about the concept of making vows and how to annul vows, but then Sefer Devarim talks about Otsas Vatecha Tishmor, that what comes out of our mouth we should keep, and Sefer Kohelet expands on that. But he says here, Tidor Pamim Muatot Atzad Hechrech, so you make few promises, only what's necessary. Verofa Pamim Asay Atzdaka Bli Neder. That's the time, just get stuck without making promises. So, because the more promises we make, the harder it is to keep them, the bigger of a chance it is that we're going to mess up. And violating vows is both an interpersonal sin, it's a sin to Hashem as well. So, better to say little and do much. I think this part of the Mishnah is also encapsulated by another Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where it says, I think it's Rabbi Hananiah ben Tradion. He says, "Kol shmasa merubin mechokmato, chokmato mikayemen." Somebody whose deeds exceed his wisdom, so the wisdom is enduring. But one whose wisdom is greater than the deeds, then the wisdom doesn't endure. So, speech and wisdom are two different things, but it's actually somewhat similar because both are only actualized with action. Our wisdom only. Whatever is up here only matters if it turns into something productive, something that's beneficial. Same with our speech. Our speech only matters, especially if we say something to somebody else. So it only matters if it's backed up with action. So it's nice to have wisdom. It's nice to be able to say good things, make promises, whatever. But it means very little to other people if you can't follow through on that. Rekev and Mishnah says further that more Ramasei Arbe also prevents machlokas, because the less we say, the less controversy is, the more it comes out of our mouth. So we're inevitably going to say something that's going to cause controversy. In fact, my grandmother was known to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it. So this is what she would say, be nice to other people, and if you don't have anything to say, it's productive, so better not to say it, just, better to do what it is that we need to do. I think this idea is also well captured by what happened at Yam Suf, at the Red Sea, because as they're important, I discussed this in the Drasha, but I'll recap because I think it proves a point very well, and matters of Amunah as well. That Bnei Israel saw that the Egyptians were approaching and the drama is building up and Moshe's not sure what to do, and it doesn't even say that Moshe cried out to God, and yet Hashem says to Moshe, "Monti Tzakir Lai, why are you crying out to me? Talk to Bnei Israel and go forward." And he tells them, lift up your staff and split the seas and go forward. It's kind of a strange thing, because aren't we supposed to dive and aren't we supposed to ask Hashem for help? So, Rashi says that he spent too long on tefillah, which also, again, more ma'avah say harbe, say what you need to say, but then get to the action. Rabban said that, Moshe didn't need to scream, just need to ask what to do. And that's also, I think, very valuable lessons, that sometimes it's just, you can talk and talk and talk, but, you need to talk sometimes to get to the action, but get to the action, do what you need to do, figure out what you need to do, get the solutions. And Rabbi Lam Zichron Livracha talked about also that at the Yom Suf wasn't the time for Moshe to pontificate about faith. It wasn't about demonstrating, it wasn't about, showing Bnei Israel how much he could daven and how much of a connection he had with God. doesn't make the problem go away. So Moshe needs to not be, you know, he didn't need to pontificate faith, but he needs to be an actor of faith, as Rabbi Lam said, being an actor of faith, that he needs to take action. That's a very important thing in leadership, is that it's easy to talk about the problems, talk about the problems. Your grandmother said, if you're not part solution, then you're part of the problem. So, yes, talking is helpful to a certain point, but you need to get the solution. You need to act on the solution. You know, right now, as we're going through COVID, we're less interested in hearing how quickly people say we can get the vaccine versus, you know, be realistic about the promise, set reasonable expectations for us, and get it done. But nobody's rushing, you know, to the TV to hear that the vaccine's going to be ready in a couple of months if it's not going to be ready by then. That's a contemporary example that I thought of. Okay, finally, the last part of the mission said, accept people cheerfully. So this is also somewhat self-explanatory. So Rabbeinu Yonah here explained it that you should show, you know, a happy face in order that, you know, people like to be around people who are cheerful and happy. So if you're if you have, you know, this aura, this vibe that you don't want to talk to people, some people don't talk to you. In fact, as Maran Bracha talked about, Rabbi Yochanan would be the first would always greet people before they had a chance to greet him. So that's a midah tova. That is a good trait to have. To accept people with happiness, and when you interact with people, to demonstrate that you enjoy being around them. And the Meiri says that even if you don't feel that joy, let's just say somebody's like going to become, you know, is coming to be a guest with you. So even if you aren't really happy to have them, you aren't happy to see them, but fake it. Make it seem like that at least you're happy to see it. And the reason for that is because is expanded upon in the Avot Rabbi Natan, that you could give somebody all the gifts in the world, but if your face is buried in the ground, you know, demonstrating that you're not really happy that you're doing, you're not interested in what you're doing, you're just doing because you have to. So the person feels embarrassed, and they feel like you didn't really gain anything from them. And I was thinking of Gary Chapman's Five Love Languages. Where he talks about there's really different ways that we can show our affection and appreciation for people, and doesn't just have to be between people in like a relationship of sorts, but you know, five love languages can apply to many different kinds of relationships. But two of the five love languages are gifts and acts of service. I think both of these sort of can fit in here. If you give a gift to somebody, you do something for somebody, but you make it very clear that you're not happy, you're doing it for it. So on the one hand, if they truly only need the utilitarian thing out of you, then fine. But the truth is that often if somebody needs, you know, if you're giving a gift to somebody, so it's not really about the gift, but it's about the emotional connection, the bond that comes with it. If you're doing a service for somebody, so you're not really just doing the service, but you're also forging a relationship with somebody. And if you're demonstrating that you're not really happy to do it, so what's the point? You know, could have done it myself. I could have gotten it myself. But it's really the feeling behind the gift that we value more than the gift or the act of service himself. So I think that's a very important insight. The Reshbat Magin Avot points out something that's quite interesting if you know a little bit about Shammai, because it seems like Shammai didn't walk his walk, because Shammai was known to be a kapdan. He was known to be a bit impatient. So we'll get to that. We'll get to the stories in a second. But Reshbatz explains that that really Shammai here was talking about bringing guests. It wasn't just talking about a, you know, general disposition. It was talking about in a particular case that if you bring people in, so say little, do much, do the things you need to do for them, and be nice to them and show that you're happy to have them. And I guess, you know, his support here is from Avraham Avinu, because, you know, if more matters, say Rabbi had to do with Avraham Avinu, then maybe this does also, and so this is all about half an hour. So the Magen Avos here limits it to the case of Hachnasas Orchim. But let's look at Shammai. Shammai is well known for these stories in the Gemara and Shabbos. And there are a few episodes where people were interested in converting, and Hillel and Shammai dealt with them in different ways. So in the cases that were brought, Shammai either sort of chewed them away, or kind of scoffed at them, or in a couple of cases even pushed them away with the builder's cubit, whether that's literal or not, I don't know. But so, one particular case, a person comes to Shammai and says, I want to wear the Kohen Gadol's clothing, so convert me so that I can become a Kohen Gadol. So Shammai pushes him away. Hillel, on the other hand, converts him, but sort of helps him to understand why he'll never become the Kohen Gadol. Reminds me, I guess, of the story. Person comes to Rabbi and says, more of a joke than a story. Person comes to Rabbi and says, and I really, really want to be a Kohen, I connect to be a Kohen. Is there any way I can become a Kohen? Rabbi's saying, oh, it's not so simple, but like, why do you want to become a Kohen? And the guy says, well, my father was a Kohen and my grandfather was a Kohen. But somebody who converts is probably not going to become the Kohen Gadol. You could become the Gadol Ador. In fact, Shmaya and Avtalion, who we mentioned before, were the greatest sages, and they were converts. But Kahuna is hereditary. But anyway, so the story finishes that these three different converts who are featured in this Gemara come together, and they said that the impatience of Shammai drove us away from this world, meaning from Torah, and Hill's patience brought us forward. So it might feel a little strange that Shammai saying, you should accept people cheerfully, if he himself didn't seem to walk the walk. One thing I might just add in here is that sometimes when people, last night Charlie Harari was discussing this on a show that I watched called Behind the Bima, with the three rabbis in Boca Raton. So Charlie Harari, who's this very successful businessman who also gives motivational talks to and is prolific in the firm community. So he was saying that we never master the things that we teach. So sometimes a lot of times people will say, what I'm saying to you, I'm also projecting on myself because, I know what I need to work on, and maybe you can learn from that. So that could be true about Shammai, but Merkav Mishnah, so that's not even necessary because when Shammai says, "Hevei kol ha'adam b'sefer panim yafot," so somebody who acts like a human being, like someone who acts like a mensch. So if you're going to come and ask repugnant questions and foolish questions, so Shammai doesn't have to give you the time of day. In fact, it says in Mishlei, don't answer the fool, if he's going to act foolish, so don't answer the fool. So the particular cases that Shammai encountered were people who were being a little bit foolish, or they're kind of being a little testy. So they say that, sometimes some of the best teachers are the ones who know how to kind of just, love, those kids who ask those, who do those ridiculous things and just kind of embrace it and whatever. But Shammai was technically within his rights to say, if someone's not going to act like a mensch, I don't need to deal with them that way. Fine. So by the way, and just my last tiny comment regarding my grandmother in terms of this part of the Mishnah, she just had this general disposition where she was always excited to see us, her grandchildren, and she was always, and you could always tell, over the phone, you could hear her smiling when one of us called, and it wasn't just because we were her grandchildren. I think that's how she treated people in general. Part of her, again, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it, but that's just in general. She was just a really, really nice person, and that, I think, came out in the way that she interacted with people and greeted people. Last thing I'll just mention, to tie all these pieces together, there's a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. We read this as a haftarah, I want to say on Tishba morning. So it says, "Kol Mar Hashem Al Yitalel Chacham B'Chokhmato." Person shouldn't glory in their strength. Al Yitalel HaGibor B'Gvurato. Person shouldn't glory in their riches. A rich person shouldn't glory in their sorry, a strong person shouldn't glory in their strength, and I tell Ashir Basho, and a rich person shouldn't glory in their riches, right? And so what are things that that a person, you know, should glory in being devoted to Hashem, because Hashem is one who acts with kindness, justice, equity. These are the things Hashem appreciates. So the Merkabah Mishnah says that these things correspond to different parts of our Mishnah. Okay, how so? So all Yitalel Chacham B'chol Chato, a person shouldn't glory in their wisdom. So if a person doesn't do Asei Torah Chakeva, if a person doesn't make their study of Torah fix, and let's say Torah here can be expanded just to wisdom, or Torah guided wisdom. Look, in today's world especially, we recognize the importance of professional developments, that that the more we educate ourselves and we learn, the better we are at what we do. So a person who's engaged in Chochmah, a person who learns Torah, is going to be better at whatever it is that they do. When it says, Ayit Halel Ashir Be'oshro, a person shouldn't glory in their riches. So you have nothing to brag about if you don't give it to anybody. So more ma'avaser habe, you know, don't talk about how much money you have. Give it to people who need it. Then people appreciate you. But otherwise, if you're just going to talk about how rich you are, so it doesn't do anything. Same with pura, same with strength. Mekabel kol adam b'sefer panim yafot. So if you find somebody who's in distress and needs your help, so help them and do it cheerfully, and especially when you do it in a way that's loving, so people will really appreciate you for this. So I think there are a lot of very important lessons that we learn from this Mishnah, both in our interactions bein adam l'makom and bein adam l'chaveiro, things that certainly you could find in any sort of secular or self-help book. But the Torah's timely riches help bring it out, and her own unique ways, I think these were also embodied by my grandmother, Aleph HaShalom.